Welcome back to NALP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by your Young Professionals Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Macy Robinson from Landcare, Luke Melangrano from Mariani Landscape, and Neil Glatt with Grow the Bitch. How are you guys doing today?
Good, Macy. How are you?
Doing great.
Doing well. How are you guys?
Texas. Doing awesome. Oh, great. Well, we're excited today to get together. A little host podcast. Just sit and talk industry today. So, Neil, what are you thinking?
I thought we could talk about hiring today because for most of us, it's we're in the spring rush or about to be in the spring rush. And I know a lot of my clients are looking at their roster and thinking, this is real thin, you know, if we're going to go out and attack these spring cleanups and get rolling here. So, yeah, I've just been having a ton of conversations with people about how can we recruit? How can we retain? What the heck do people even want in a job? Why do I keep getting ghosted? So I figured we could maybe chat about some of the new strategies that people are trying and maybe discuss what's working. I don't know. What are you guys involved in hiring right now or starting to think about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, Neil, I think you said something right there about the retaining employees. And I think, when it comes to retaining employees, we have to be looking at it just like we're trying to retain our clients. I mean, you know that to keep an existing client or keep an existing employee is a heck of a lot cheaper than it is to find a new client, find a new employee or whatever. And this is the time of year where what are our field staff, if that's what we're talking about, our field staff doing? They're going around and shopping. Every company is in the same boat right now where they're desperate for labor. They need people. They're afraid. They're nervous of what's going to happen. And so they're going to be shopping around. And, you know, I think if you're not out in front of that and talking with your people, you're going to be behind and you're going to lose your staff. I mean, we've been calling our staff since probably middle of February, confirming that they're coming back, seeing what's going on, just checking in with them. And if there's any sort of reservations or they're up in the air, unsure, get them in, sit them down, talk to them and figure out what needs to be done to keep them on your staff, whether that's a pay increase, whether that's a position change, you know, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. Hear them out.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. And there's a phenomenon happening right now in many companies where the wage for new employees has increased and signing bonuses have become a thing for a lot of companies. I personally don't think they're required if you do some other things well, but new employees are being paid as much as or even more than existing loyal staff. And it's no surprise to me that they're really feeling burnt by that whole experience. Cause I mean, listen, everybody knows what everybody else gets paid, whether you want them to or not, right?
Yeah, I mean, I talk with a couple of the guys on my team and they've been with us for 10, 15, sometimes even 20 years. And we talk about what they started out at making, you know, when they joined our company. And now we talk about what we're paying starting wage for somebody who walks in with zero experience. And yeah, they're like, you know, I mean, it's over twice what I was making when I first started 10, 15 years ago, and rightfully so. I mean, the price should go up. I kind of agree with you, Neil. I don't think signing bonuses are a necessary thing. I think if you can provide good pay and value to your employees, I think you can find people. And for what I've noticed so far, I mean, a lot of our staff has not returned yet. We're typically middle to end of March that they start coming back and sitting down with them. So far, the few that we've had conversations with have all, you know, things have all gone well. And it's not always about that more money. You know, they're getting paid fair wages and good wages, but it's, they want growth. They want development. They've been stuck at this position for, you know, 2 or 3 years, maybe a number two on the crew, crew leader in training or whatever. They want that, that next step to become a crew leader. And so, you know, finding those opportunities within your staff.
Yeah. I think it's a good point. I was having a conversation recently with my team member who does all of our marketing. And I think I shared back when we were at Landscapes on our live podcast that I'm in this grand experiment to help her find another job in our coaching conversations because that's what she wants to do. And my choice is to pretend that doesn't exist or to be, you know, a good mentor for her despite that. And so we're still working through that process. She's finally landed something, but she had an interview and I asked her how it went. She said, I was kind of disappointed. And she cited a few reasons why she was. They were unprepared. They weren't really representing the opportunity, which I think, you know, as hiring managers, we need to be prepared and we need to be articulate and be on time and all those things. But then she said, you know, I was surprised at that they were only offering 15 an hour for me because I'm really expecting 20 to 25 an hour. And so I said, well, you know, can we talk about that for a second? Because that's more than we pay you. Right. And up until a few weeks ago, you were at 15 and we gave you a little raise, but you're still not at 20. Help me understand, like you tell me that you're happy here, but you're also looking for this wage. And she goes, it's totally different, Neil. Like, yeah, that's the wage I expect, but you brought me in before, you taught me all these skills that helped me get to that level. And she goes, we sit down and we talk weekly and this coaching, she's like, it's just so much more value that that's not even important. And it was so interesting to hear somebody say, yeah, I'm really looking for this wage, but then at the same time, I actually value these things more. Right. And, I don't know. It was nice to hear that what I preach actually is playing out a little bit. So, I don't know, Macy, are you seeing any of that with your guys?
Yeah, we're like we actually had a hiring call at 11. So an hour before this call, and I saw your email talking about this topic and I was like, oh, how fitting, because that's just where everyone's mind's at. You know, you found out if you're getting your visa workers or not pretty much, you know, at this, unless you're a group C maybe. So you know where your year is headed, if it's time to like hit the ground running, hitting up gas stations, or if it's management level too. I mean, there's just a shortage. There's always a shortage here. But it's just finding those little things, you know, like Luke said, checking in with them, seeing how they're doing, you know, in the end, you want to find out if they're coming back, but just those little touches of, you know, how's your winter? How is your family? And I think a lot of it too is just the culture that you provide for them coming into it. A lot of those guys just want consistency in their life. Like they like having the wrap that they're on, having uniforms when they show up for their first day. You know, they come in Friday looking for a job and they're starting Monday, you know, having a t-shirt for them, having a supervisor designated that they're going to already. It's a lot of the small stuff, you know, having coffee for them in the mornings or you know, having an account manager's phone on their desk for their first day. So not everyone has their personal phone and then they always call their personal phone when they have issues.
Yeah. I think all that small stuff is so critical because it's the observable signs of the underlying, we care about you. We took the time to prepare for you and we've gotten you what we think you need to be successful. Right. And so subconsciously, it's sending a really big message, even though they're really small items, right?
Yeah.
I think another thing that everybody needs to be cognizant of and looking at is, you know, the wages in our industry are getting driven up.
Sure.
You know, and it's, you know, whether you agree, whether you disagree, whatever the case may be, but you're going to start getting people who are coming to want to work within this industry because they're seeing, oh man, look at this. They're paying, you know, $17 an hour starting, no experience, or $16 an hour, no experience. You're going to get people in that are literally green to doing any sort of landscaping. And, you know, I think this is the time where you have to be willing to take those on. And this is going to put your training program and, you know, your leaders within your company to the test too, because you know, everybody wants that guy that's got, you know, 5, 6, 10 years of experience. But I'm not saying go be desperate and hire every single person out there. You know, you need to make sure that they're the right fit, but make sure you're willing to put in that train, you know, do that training with them, because I think we've all had those experiences where you bring somebody on and it's like, you know, I don't think this person's going to really work out and be anything. And, you know, they turn out to be a fantastic employee. They show up every day, they work hard. You know, they're willing to learn, and you get yourself a pretty good crew person out of it. So, I think, you know, I think you need to be selective, but, keep an open mind with your hiring at this time too.
Yeah. Well, so there's actually kind of a movement to take that a step further called open hiring. And, it was kind of like invented by this bakery in Brooklyn in the 80s, actually. But they just stopped all hiring screening, and they call it open hiring or inclusive hiring. And the way it works is you show up, you put your name on the list. As long as you are legal to work in the US and you can stand on your feet for 8 hours and lift 50 pounds, because that's what you have to do in the bakery, you get a job. And they just, when there's an open position, they call the next person on the list and they bring them in. Now, to your point, Luke, they had to really revamp manager expectations. They had to really invest in training programs. They had to make a number of accommodations in order to do it. But they found that their turnover reduced like 60%. Their hiring costs reduced more than 90%, because they really didn't have any hiring costs anymore, right? No interviews, no time, no background checks. And they've made it successful for almost 4 decades with this model, to the point where they actually have an institute now, and they're partnering with different companies to do it. And I don't think it's right for every position, and I don't think it's right for every company or industry, but I think in our industry, it's like, it's such a match made in heaven. You know, like, people who are formerly incarcerated are unemployed nearly 5 times as much as general population. And most of the time, the work we do, like, we don't need background checks. Nobody cares if our people have face tattoos or made mistakes in their past, right? Like, generally non-interacting with customers, it's so easy to hire those people. And in my experience, they were the ones who worked the hardest. And so I'd even go a step further to try and target them. My best shovelers in the past were actively enrolled in a faith-based addiction recovery program. And I'd be like, how many can I get? And I would go to every one of their locations and just hire them exclusively before I hire anybody else, because going to the bus station, Macy, like you talked about, was so difficult, right? And these guys are like, yeah, it's okay, but, you know, Dunkin' Donuts is paying $2 more an hour, and it's inside and it's warm, and I don't have to work at 2 a.m. And it was true, right? Back then, it's even more true now.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's some places Target's hiring at $24 an hour, and it's in the air conditioning or heat at times. Mm-hmm. It's a fight everywhere. Anybody that I've talked to, whether it's one of my best friends, it's a fellow employee, like just neighbors around, everybody is hiring, whether it's a COO or it's, you know, the guy shoveling, everybody hiring. And it's just a crazy time in general. But what are you guys seeing, like, kind of what recruiting platforms, like we talked about going out physically, or, you know, you have the walk-ins, like, are you guys seeing a lot of Facebook recruiting? I mean, Indeed hiring processes, anything you've seen in your businesses around?
I mean, For us, we've actually had really good success this winter. Our marketing team really, you know, ramped up our Facebook stuff. We do it leading up to snow events. Anytime we get a forecast for snow, and I want to say our inbox right now has like 50 or 60 people in it. Now, some of them I know are just, you know, out looking, and they don't necessarily always show up, but we've brought in, when we're able to get in touch with them, bringing them in and sitting down and having an interview and at least vetting them out. You know, there's the problems always of, oh, you know, I want to get paid cash for snow and this and that. And, you know, you can't do that. So, but it is generating traffic, and we're trying and pushing as hard as we can then to get them involved with working in the green season for us. And so that's been a real big, actually success for us, which I was kind of surprised by, but so far that at least on the laborer side, that's where we've put a little time and effort into lately.
Yeah. Facebook for sure. I've heard Craigslist is still really good. Indeed, is okay for frontline, not so much for, a little more towards middle management, a lot better. But my clients who are having the best success are using, it's not just where they're advertising, right? It's what they're posting. They're getting those posts out daily. They're using software now to, have QR codes and to interact with text message with people. You know, you mentioned, Luke, the challenge is getting in touch with the people who reach out, right? And, a few weeks ago, Home Depot announced that they're trying to hire 100,000 people for their spring rush. And their VP of global talent acquisition was like, the way we're going to do this primarily is through next day job offers. So if you're clicking around for a job and you click on Home Depot, within 24 hours, you're going to have a job offer if you can pass any sort of minimum requirements. And most companies that I know are struggling to connect with candidates in 2 to 3 days, right? So for those rare people who are looking for a job, I think the manual system is just, it's 10 years old, right? It's not a strategy for success in 2022. And my friend who runs the software company has these automated text messages and automated screening. And it has absolutely changed the game for response rates. They're no longer getting ghosted by candidates. It's really holistic. I mean, game changer stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to what we talked about just at the beginning of keeping people. I mean, it's the same thing when you're trying to hire somebody. I mean, if we're getting an application in, I mean, we're, as soon as that application or contact comes in, we're reaching out to them within like 30 minutes. To try and call them. I mean, you have to be, because if they're messaging you or reaching out to you, they're reaching out to your four competitors down the road for the same exact thing. And so, I mean, it's just like a new client. You get that lead in, you should be calling them back instantly at the very least the same day.
Which is great if you have a recruiter and it's
sure
maybe during business hours, right?
For a
smaller team. And even for a bigger team, you know, finding a way to automate it so that when that application hits at 6:30 in the morning, when this guy's like on his way to his job right now, before your recruiters are in, to beat your competitors with that automatic text message and the text message stats they share, like 97% are read within 15 minutes. So it's, you have to be that fast. I don't think you can do it manually ultra successfully.
Yeah, it's about they talked about that on our call at 11, was just the initial touch. Like the longer that you let it go, just the easier it's at the door. I had a guy come in Monday morning and I speak Spanish enough to like be able to talk to my guys and like get what needs to be done and like just easy conversational, you know, how's your weekend? But this guy that came in didn't speak any English. And so like trying to get that process of like, well, this is how much we're offering, but. And so like having to tell him like, come back in Thursday for, you know, my translator to come in and, you know, today's Thursday, tell him to come in first thing in the morning if he's still interested. So of course he probably went down the road to, you know, A, B and C landscape company and got a job on the spot right there. So it is so much about the speed, like that, the text message stuff sounds really awesome. Like you said, everybody has it. Yeah. Everybody has a cell phone.
They do, right? And they don't have email. and we're reaching out to them via email.
Yeah. You know? They're not, they're not checking their email. Just trying to get my iPhone set up. You have to have emails on it. And I have supervisors that the iCloud thing's an issue. And so, the text message is definitely the way to go for sure.
Are you using QR codes yet? So people can apply via QR code?
But it's at the college level. We haven't rolled out into branches. Like, the guys walk in, hourly employees walk in and apply through that, which is a really good idea, but we are using it at the college recruiting level. It seemed to make it pretty easy because it sits in their Safari too. If they don't want to fill it out right during the career fair, once you scan it and pop it into your Safari, it's there later when you go to Google search something or look at something. So that is a nice piece of it. We've liked it so far. We rolled it out last year, had some kinks, but it's definitely shown some success.
Yeah. Once you optimize the landing page so it can be read on mobile and it's an easy form, it's the pandemic's really helped us with that. I mean, it's 30-year-old technology, but it took off last year, so.
So huge. Even things that are more normal now, it's just the QR codes. It's there. Might as well leave it. Save on just regular germs. But no, we like the QR code. I need to get that rolled out in the office. That would definitely make it easier. And then it can go to somebody if they're out of town or, working in the other branch somewhere. It's they're going to see it come through and can reach out automatically versus there's an application in here for you whenever you come over to our office in 2 days. And it's just too late. But hiring is always an ongoing issue. What about middle management? What are you guys kind of seeing? I feel like those are really hard roles to fill. I feel like you can fill the hourly employees, it might not be the best fit, and you have to watch out for safety and keep an eye on them. But the middle management role is still really hard. There's less kids going into college, so there's less into the programs for us in college. Where do you think people are finding people besides just stealing from company? Not stealing, but talking to competitors and figuring out where do you find that management?
Homegrown. I mean, you just gotta. It's so challenging because you have to put in so much more cost in terms of training and time, and it takes longer, right? But if you can, if you find the right, we use an entrepreneurial talent assessment, so we roll that out to all kinds of people who maybe wouldn't necessarily qualify. And then sometimes we're really surprised when people are like, wow, you show a lot of aptitude for this. Would you be interested in committing to this 3-year journey and training them in-house? And the challenge again is, can you train them effectively? Meaning, can you take enough time out of your schedule to actually invest in them? And two, can you keep them retained and engaged long enough to get the ROI on the time you're going to put in, right? But I mean, when you're talking account managers, every single account manager who's really successful in the trades that I know of, the owners are they started as a receptionist and we grew them into this role. They just learned over time. So,
yeah, I think it's definitely important. You got to be looking within your own ranks, first of all, if you can, and try and find those people who you can train and be understanding that, while maybe this guy is a great crew leader or whatever, he can run his crew fantastically. Is he going to be the best supervisor? It's a completely different role. And so they may not always succeed at that without really good training. But I think too, just, we've gone through it a little bit over the past few years where we're hiring people outside of the industry a little bit who maybe have a good sales experience, and we're teaching them the landscaping aspect. And, we're fortunate enough, and, may see a company like Landcare, they're a big enough company where you have those multiple layers where you can partner them up with somebody who is really good on the horticultural side and can show them and train them on what needs to be done. But like Neil said, it's going to take these people, somebody's not going to learn landscaping and horticulture in 6 months or whatever. It's going to take 2 or 3 years. But we've got a guy who used to be a a stockbroker in Chicago, and he's a great salesman. I mean, he talks to these clients. One of the best people actually to talk to these clients, our clientele, because they typically dealt with somebody like him on the stock market before, so he knows how to talk with them. He gets the landscaping part, but he's got a team of people around him who can help him along.
Right. So unless you're doing like really technical design work, I mean, you already have the experts. So a great salesperson is going to know how to engage the team for team selling from that technical side. And it's like, listen, you learn a couple basics. You learn enough to be able to identify potential issues. You don't need to know really that much more, you know, unless you're going to try and make them do estimating too, then they have to really start to understand it a little bit better.
But yeah, I mean, they do estimates and put together proposals and things like that. But if they've got to, you know, redo a front entrance to somebody's house, we have designers who they can say, come with me, look at this, design it. I will go and sell the design for you because I can talk to this client. I'm probably more comfortable talking to this client than anybody because I dealt with them, you know, financially for years. So, I think you got to just kind of be creative with those things and be willing to look outside the box and not just looking for, well, I want this person who's been in the landscape industry for X amount of years, knows this and that. And those people are important. Yes. I wouldn't go out and build my whole team around stockbrokers or anything like that, but you can utilize them to fill roles and I think you'll actually be pretty surprised by their success if trained properly.
Yeah. Invest the time into them. Maybe kind of see it. I feel like the way that I see it with the team that I have and just the recruiting that I've done is production/operations, you know, pinpointing that person on your team, that supervisor, you know, driver, like on-site guy, like, is there anybody that has the potential, if given the training, to move into that production manager role? And then kind of like what you said with the stockbroker, like for an account manager, you need someone that can talk to the clients. And like you said, they'll learn the horticulture over time or have support staff, but finding someone that can just talk to people and, you know, be an ear for them to, you know, vent or whatever, make sure that they're communicating, like someone who can communicate. It's a different approach. And honestly, it's worked out in most cases versus having to find that perfect person with the landscape degree from this college that did 4 years. Like, they're just so few and far between, and everyone's pining after them. So just finding great people that it's like property management. So people that just fall into it are sometimes the best people in it forever.
Are you recruiting property managers yet? Like your clients?
No, I haven't gotten there yet. None of them are really into the landscaping that much, but there's definitely like, I've seen engineers, I've never thought about it, but there's definitely some engineers that I've met that I'm like, you could definitely be an account manager or like a production operations manager. I feel like a ton of our production managers either come up through the crews or they kind of grew up more ag style, like learn the horticulture side of it. But they're just like nitty gritty guys and girls that like want to go out there and work. Like, they might not know, like I have two people that have worked for me that don't know anything about horticulture, but they grew up working on equipment or just working hard in a blue collar job and with their parents, and so they just enjoy the landscaping piece of it. So there's a bunch of different ways to do it.
We've actually hired some of our clients have such big estates that they have their own property manager for things. And we've hired one or two actually to be client reps for us. And for the most part, it works out. It's the same thing again, like they know how to communicate well with these homeowners who we're dealing with, and what they're looking for and what the expectation is of them and then both them and us. As a company. So they actually do very, very well, and they're very comfortable talking to our clients. Cause I think sometimes, with us, we're dealing with very wealthy people, and there's always that little bit of hesitation and nervousness for somebody who's not in their shoes, and how to talk to them and communicate. And I think with good training, you can learn that, but it takes time, and there's always a little bit of that nervousness to maybe your standard client rep.
Yeah. You know who I observe as being fairly consistently dissatisfied with their careers right now, who I think are prime opportunities to poach, is people who work for universities in the grounds crews and people who are working for DPWs, Department of Public Works, or one of my guys was like retired New York Sanitation Department. And I find that they are working with tighter and tighter budgets, and their organizations aren't attracting anybody. So their workloads are increasing and their staff is aging, and they're really good at juggling lots of different priorities, because usually it's far more than just, you know, grounds maintenance. And they are just so frustrated at the fact that they can't get the resources they need. I think that they're prime to go recruit to a much simpler job with better resources in our industry.
Resources is a huge thing. That's what makes your job easier. So yeah, I can definitely see how those universities or city workers, you know, they are prime prospects, trying to do less, more with less.
Yeah.
Right. The popular phrase. Yeah, the communication. You can tell too when you're hiring somebody, like, are they communicating back? It's how you tell, you know, are they going to be a good employee? Like, if they're the one that reached out to you for a job and it takes them 4 days to respond to your response, they're not that invested. They're the ones that were wanting to change. It's a good tell-all in recruiting, you know, just communication.
And I think too, you need to trust your gut when you're hiring somebody. I mean, I'm training somebody now in my old role, and he's never really done a lot of hiring or anything like that. And we sat down with a gentleman the other day and interviewed him for a crew leader position, who used to work for us, left, came and wants to come back at a higher role. And naturally he wants a higher pay. And myself and the individual I'm training stepped out and we talked about it a little bit, and he said, I don't think so. You know, I don't think we should pay him that amount right now, and this and that. And he went back and forth. And I said, you know, look, at the end of the day, you need to trust your gut. You're going to be able to tell. I think we all have kind of that reaction when we sit down with somebody of whether or not they're going to be necessarily, you know, a good fit or not, or they're a good hire or not. And if you have that, you know, uneasy feeling, I would probably pass. There's always certain circumstances, but I think you really need to use that and, you know, trust your instincts.
You know, I find it funny how people stop doing that once they make the hire. Like, they're so slow to fire people. Even when on the second day or second week, they're like, I don't know if this is going to work out. And then that guy stays around for like 6 months, and it's just mediocre the whole way until it gets worse and worse and finally blows up. Right. And so I think if you're going to do that when you hire, you have to do that when it comes to firing too. And
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And what is that? You know, being slow to fire and letting that tension and those issues just build and build and build, it spills over into your other employees who are, you know, good employees and showing up and doing their jobs and things like that. And it makes them not enjoy wanting to come to work every day.
Yeah.
And then they're going to start, you know, mirroring that behavior.
Right.
And you're going to probably turn a good employee into a bad employer, get them down a bad track, that then you got to sit down and you got to have a challenging conversation with them, and then they're going to get mad at you guys. And, you know, it's just, I think you got to definitely, like Neil said, if somebody's a problem, cut them out and end the situation and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you guys trying to overhire your positions right now in order to deal with inevitable turnover?
Definitely. I mean, I think we are. We're looking, and like I said, I mean, if we have that good feeling about them, and that we think that there's somebody that we can train and get up to speed, then we're willing to take them on and provide that training. But you have to be willing to and understand you're probably going to have some loss too. There's going to be naturally people who just don't show up. I mean, Macy, I'm sure you go through the same thing where you hire somebody, you get their uniforms and all this ready, and Monday morning, where are they? They're not answering the call. They're not answering the text. They were supposed to be here, and naturally they're not. So I think it's almost kind of silly not to overhire a little bit. I'm not saying if you need a total of 50 people, go out and hire 100, but right. Maybe hire like 60 or so, because you're going to lose a few people, whether they quit or you decide to cut them loose.
Yeah, definitely try to stay. We try to keep it pretty tight from our overhiring standpoint. But definitely always nice to have at least one extra person, because it is, like Luke said, it is inevitable that, you know, someone's kid will be sick or someone will have to move. You know, they could be gone forever. They could be out for a whole week, and it really does mess up your whole schedule. So it's just finding that balance, whether you have to cut back to 36 hours if you're that overstaffed, or if you get a huge snowstorm in and it's great that you're there and everybody's working on snow that week. And then like middle class or middle management, I mean, if someone awesome comes along, we kind of have the concept of, you know, let's grab them. There might not be a place for them, but this might be a one in a lifetime chance that this person comes and wants to join the team. Like, let's find a place for them on the team. It might not be, you know, the Austin team, but maybe they're hopping around all of South Texas, or, you know, they're going to go spend some time on the East Coast, whatever it is. Like, if someone's awesome, finding that position for them.
No, I agree. I think you have to be adaptable and opportunistic when those people come along. And you mentioned like kids getting sick. I think, you know, coming out of COVID, that is like, it just keeps happening all the time, right?
Gone are the days of, you know, you're sick and trying to push through the sickness, right? By coming to work.
Yeah. Right. And a friend of a friend of a kid, or, you know, a teacher of a kid gets sick, and all of a sudden there's nothing to do, right? Like, that person's probably going to be out of work. And so I think having this flexibility is so critical. And the only way that I know how to maintain the obligations while being flexible is to have more resources, right? And that just goes back to your point you made at the beginning, Luke, is like, we got to raise prices to be able to do that. You know, that's part of the cost increase of labor, is we need more flexibility for our people.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely do. And it trickles down to price increases for clients, and you know, having those conversations that, look, you know, we have labor's more inflation, this, that, there's all sorts of things that, I mean, I don't think, you know, it's not unheard of that you're seeing 8, 10, 15% price increases for clients right now. I mean, you know, just in inflation alone, it's 6, 7, 8%, somewhere like that. Then so yeah, and to Macy's point too, she's talking about, if you're overstaffing your teams, you need to be looking at managing your hours. And, you know, if you're budgeting to have, you know, 50 people with X amount of hours and X amount of overtime, and you suddenly staff with 60 and you're working those same amount of hours, I mean, you're going to be not being a very profitable company at the end of the year, unless if you pull the reins back on it a little bit.
Yeah, your customers will be happy, but your bank account will not be very happy. So definitely don't hire the 100 people on it. We need to do that as a topic sometime, is the budget conversation, the price increases. It's so real. I feel like the landscaping industry is always the last one kind of take on to that. Whereas, you know, Chick-fil-A, you just drive up one day and it's more expensive. It is what it is. You still buy the chicken. You don't say no, you don't drive away.
Yeah. I mean, so many people say that our customers are too price sensitive, but it's like, I think you're the one who's too price sensitive, right? Because I really don't think most of your customers care that much. I mean,
yeah,
they understand what's happening, like most people do. So
yeah,
it shouldn't be that difficult. But I guess that's a future topic.
Now, there's still so many things that we could do, but well, shoot, should we wrap it up? Should we rose and thorn?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Kick it off.
Sure. Rose. I get to go home this weekend. Super excited to go back to Oklahoma. So very much looking forward to that beautiful weather. I don't think I have a thorn. You know, things are going good. Nothing's absolutely miserable. So we're just trying to stay positive and push into spring. So no thorns this week.
I can go next. Roses, I'm back to the podcast for the first time. And gosh, it's been like 3 months since our winter break or whatever. So that's going good. It's one of my favorite times of year. It's college basketball. The March Madness is coming up in the next few weeks. So, you know, there's a lot more college basketball on these days than anything else. So that's always fun. Thorn, I don't really have any like negative things. It is March. It's spring is just around the corner. So, I know the free time and whatnot is going to be going away more and more as we approach the beginning of April. And, the attitudes are going to change a little bit as, the stress of, you know, the start of the season kind of kicks off. So, but it's so excited for the season to start and, you know, some nice weather hopefully coming up instead of cold and snow or rain, anything like that.
Well, my thorn is a really significant one. It's very, very topically appropriate since we're talking about labor, and that is what's happening with Major League Baseball. They've officially canceled games and, just so disappointing. I really just wish Rob Manfred liked the sport because I'm convinced he doesn't. But we will endure. There are other baseball leagues around the world to watch. So, but Rose, lots of roses to balance it out. Had an awesome time in the south of France with my MBA program. I was bummed I had to miss so many podcasts, but excited to be back. And starting in April, we have a Snow Fighters Institute event every month. So we'll be taking people to the Caterpillar factory in North Carolina and getting ready for next winter snow season, starting all the way in April. So super exciting to get that season kicked off and helping people with their snow business.
Luke's closing out snow and you're getting ready for 2023.
Well, that's because Luke has a dedicated snow guy year round, right? So
he's mixed. He's another production manager like me, but he's in charge of our snow and ice stuff. So
he's thinking about it.
We're always thinking about snow. So it's a big part of our business. So, but I mean, it wasn't actually too bad of a year for us up here. I mean, we had probably went out as many times as I did last year, whether it was for plowing or salting, but we didn't have a lot of like the big storms. A lot of those big storms that you saw hitting the Midwest were south of us. So I want to say like our biggest snowfall of the season was 6 inches maybe, which isn't all that significant for us. I mean, you know, if we get like 10, 12, 20 inches, that's a weather maker for us. So, but I'm sure we'll still have one more snowstorm decide to move through here right as we're about ready to start slinging some mulch in a couple weeks.
Well, that's normally how it works out.
Those are the worst ones.
Yeah, exactly. Because then it just pushes everything back. So.
Well, so glad to have you back, Luke. Good to see you again. Glad to have you back, Neil. I'm glad you're back again. But just thank you again, everybody, for being a part of Growing in the Green Industry. And also a big thank you to our listeners. So subscribe, share, leave a review, and we hope you enjoy this podcast. Thanks.
Thank you.
See ya.